Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. Yeah, it's a great honor to have you on the show tonight. Welcome, Deepak Chopra.
Thank you.
Yes, this is Uri.
Hi, Uri. It's Nicole Whitney calling News for the Soul. Welcome to News for the Soul, Robert Allen.
Thank you, Nicole. It's great to be here with you tonight.
You are listening to the News for the Soul Radio Network.
Next on News for the Soul, it's time for the Not Too Late Show with Miche Meisner. Miche is an inspirational humorist, an alchemical wizard, and a healer's healer. Gifted with psychic abilities, sharp insight, loving nature, and lots of study, she brings light to the planet through multiple modalities. Get ready for today's wisdom and woo. Here's Miche.
Hey, welcome to another awesome Wednesday live show, slightly later than expected, but not too late show. I'm your host, Miche Meisner, and this show is where I bring coaches and healers and guides and visionaries and agents of change into conversations to spark our curiosity and enrich our perspectives, to open our minds, to learn about different ways of becoming and growing and healing, and tools that make it possible to exact great change now in the moment with ease and with grace. It is never too late to tap into your soul, uplift your heart, and activate your purpose. My guest today is Deborah A., who is a leadership mentor and the creator of Global Village Campus. Deborah describes herself as a disruptor who from an early age knew that she was here to shake things up and to ignore the status quo. She focuses on listening to her own inner wisdom and reminding others that we are all connected. She's calling today from sunny Phoenix, Arizona. Don't know if it's sunny today, but probably. She enjoys long walks, drinking green juice, and learning from while observing her 8-year-old daughter. So welcome, Deborah. I'm so happy to have you on the show today.
Thank you, Miche. It's an honor to be here.
Thank you. Yeah. So my first question for you is, you know, as I read to people, you call yourself a disruptor and that you have been such, been a disruptor as you define it from an early age. So I'm wondering, what is a disruptor, disrupting my speech? And what did that look like for you when you were little, right? And as a child, as a teenager, a young adult, and you've been being a disruptor all these years, so where has it taken you to now? So that's like five questions in one. just, I guess, start by what is a disruptor? What's up with that?
Okay. Well, thank you for asking. I'm actually looking at, while you asked the question, I was like, well, let me get the dictionary definition. Like, to disrupt is basically to interrupt by causing a disturbance or a problem. So, okay. Of course, it's all depending on how you, what angle or perception you're coming from. But a lot of what I do and how I see things and how I respond to things, I've noticed just by observing others, because obviously I don't know, you know, it's hard to see the objectively what's going on with you. So I use the relationships and interactions with others as a mirror for me to see myself better. And I've just noticed, you know, ever since I was young that I was very different in the way that I perceived things, the way that I thought about things, the way I reacted to things, and often was perceived by institutions and authorities as problematic.
Right. Although that's so in the dictionary. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Sorry.
That's what it said in the dictionary, right? Problem, creating problems. But I don't think we're looking at it like that, even though they did. Okay. So you were kind of seen as maybe a little problematic, maybe a little bit of a troublemaker because you didn't go with the status quo.
You know, it's really funny because I'm actually very much not a troublemaker. I'm actually a connector. So a lot of my focus is always on bringing people into harmony and, you know, unity and to stop the trouble. So it was always very bizarre to me that I was seen as problematic because I thought I was, like, doing the opposite. But, you know, in society, there's, like, there's society and then there's, like, humanity, and they're not necessarily the same thing. So society is, like, what we use to feel comfortable. It's what we use to feel certain and sure about ourselves and, you know, sure that tomorrow is going to be something recognizable from today or yesterday. And so there's a sort of constant pressure from society to conform that we all feel, and all of us have different levels of reaction to that pressure and a different levels of sensitivity to that pressure. So I am people whose sensitivity is incredibly high to that pressure, and I'm not a fan of it. So I just in just wanting to always listen to my own will and follow my own will, I was seen as problematic by those who wanted me to conform with the, you know, general societal rule. But that was not the same as the human connection that I could feel and, you know, relate to people of many different backgrounds and really enjoy and appreciate learning from, which I know you and I share in common, just because of the human-to-human aspect of things, which is quite independent of societal norms and expectations and culture and all that good stuff.
Right, because it's alive and it's fluid and it's dynamic, which is exactly the opposite of the conformity and standardization that so much of society is trying to build in to us. So, so you just kept trying to color outside the lines there.
Yeah, right? I was like, forget the lines. I'm drawing my own picture.
Right, and I'm guessing that instead of being praised for your wild creativity and incredible awareness, right, of who and what's going on around you, you were kind of told to, like, look at the paper again, see those lines, and stay in there.
Yeah, it's really interesting because when you said coloring within the lines and I thought about it, it used to always irritate me if my coloring went outside of the lines when I was a kid growing up. I always wanted to be, like, a very neat colorer. But the irony of that is that pretty much every aspect of my being, the way I spoke and the way I showed up, was just so different to people around me. But I was always trying hard to look like the good, obedient, because I was in a very very strict religious home. You know, I was always trying to be obedient and submissive because that's what I was taught was the right thing to do. So you can imagine the level of internal conflict I suffered, you know, just like trying to fit inside of those lines while at the same time, like, not able to help the fact that I, like, couldn't change the way I thought. I couldn't change the way I processed the world. So obviously there were giveaways. And I was actually, when I was younger, I was ashamed of those giveaways. I wanted to look like I fit in. I wanted to be accepted. You know, there was a lot of shame and heavy weight around being considered a rebel was, like, one of the worst insults that you could have in my community. It was so bad. It was like, you know, so it was so shameful. It was like, I liken it to, I just watched this movie Mulan last month, and, you know, she was, and this is typical of many cultures where it's like, you bring shame upon your family. Like, that was a lot of how they kept everyone in line. Like, you're a woman, this is your role. You cannot bring shame upon our family. You must bring honor to our family. You must show. So it was like, I felt the same way. And I just felt like I was bringing shame to my family because of the fact that I could not keep within the, you know, what was expected in terms of, like, the allowable tolerance for conformity. I was far out from that allowable tolerance.
And, you know, it's sad. It's so I feel, you know, had similar sort of pressures and certainly criticized myself, judged myself for, you know, a lot of times it was like, why can't I just be normal? Where can I just, you know, do what other people are doing or be satisfied with what other people are accepting? And I keep, you know, wanting more and how people relate and how kind people are and just all these different things in what people want to engage with me on, you know, in conversations and just all these different levels, and just wish that I could just fit in better. And, you know, finally coming into really my own appreciation of myself and celebration of myself, like I feel pretty good about all those things where I didn't fit in, because, you know, like you, it's a different level of awareness. It's a different level of vision for how people can be together and be themselves. And, you know, I sort of feel now like, thank God for us. Thank God I'm not the only one, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm finding, you know, you and others, and then get to bring you on the show so other people can hear about it too. Like, you know, the world needs us to shake things up and to, you know, if no one steps outside the line, you don't even know that there is a line.
Exactly.
Because, you know, everybody's just operating like within, and, you know, you got to push on that or just jump over the line, right? So what did that look like for you as a teenager?
That's a good question. So I think through my teens, I never really got to my teens until I was in my 20s.
Okay.
It's hilarious. My mom used to be like, she was such a good teenager. And then she got into her 20s, and then it was like worse. But I stuck really hard to trying to live within that box for a very, very, very long time. So I would say through my teen years, I was like, you know, I don't know. It's like my mom was always worried about me for one reason or another. For a time, she was like, are you interested in anything? Like, I was very to myself, and I was very, I just didn't have the normal, you know, pursuits of a teenager. But what was brewing inside, now I realize, of course, later, because in your teenage years is when you're, you know, the way that you learn is kind of really developed, like how you really process new information and what you do with it. And I think I was really, and I've always been this way, in deep observation, you know, just really observing the world and trying to figure out what does that mean. And I think one of the questions that fascinated me the most was, how can someone have like the worst ever circumstances like imaginable and they're so happy? Like, what is that about? What do they know that, like, you know, because I'm, like, super sad if, like, there's no hot water, you know, for the shower. And, like, you know, and they're, like, going through these horrible atrocities and, like, injustices and, you know, disabilities and challenges. Like, what makes them, like, why are they able to be happy? And, like, so many of us are, like, so miserable over nothing. And so that was one of the questions that I used to ponder so much, like, what's really the key to being happy? It was always there. And of course, I didn't realize that was what I was doing until like many years later. But I think in those teen years, I was just in deep observation of the world and trying to figure things out and trying to figure out like how to make my life work in a way that I would be proud of.
Right. And so in the years between then and now, have you figured out any of the secrets, you know, to being happy, to feeling good regardless of your circumstances?
Well, I think yes and no. I think we never figure anything out. If it's coming from a figure out place, we're already starting off on a bad foundation, because, you know, the brain can't do much really. Like it's a servant truly to the soul. But on the other hand, to say yes, because I've definitely learned, and life has given me plenty of opportunities of being able to practice and demonstrate cultivating deep joy and inner satisfaction when literally everything is falling apart around and all the foundations and structures that we thought were so solid are all crumbling. I've had that happen many, many times in my life, and I'm very happy and honored to say that I have been able to not only like hold on to my joy, but actually grow it in those times, grow my strength. And I think that's one of the gifts that I was bestowed to be able to share with others how to do that.
That is an awesome, I want to say superpower, but it, you know, doesn't have to be super in the sense that, you know, like you were born with some amazing powers that other people weren't. You have lived through it and discovered things in ways, and that's a great thing to teach other people. Something that I also, you know, in my struggle with being unhappy with myself and my life, and, you know, grew up pretty privileged, pretty, you know, things were pretty easy for me, and yet I really struggled to be here, to be happy, to like myself, whatever, you know, and sort of same thing, looked at other people who, you know, like, how are they doing it? How are they pulling that off when I didn't know how to either? And kind of along with that, a bit of teaching or perspective, you know, the growing through the years, going from why is this happening to me, which is where a lot of people are at, you know, where you feel like you're just a victim, and then shifting to why is this happening for me, where, okay, now we're sort of in cahoots and maybe, you know, I'm not being punished. And then sometimes, though, that feels like, you know, when somebody says, well, I guess you needed that to happen in order to learn X, Y, Z, you know, and still it can feel kind of, I don't know, not exactly punishing, but I don't think things happen that way. So where I've come to is, you know, okay, this is happening, and how can I use that as in my growth? How can I relate to it? How can I learn about myself or about the world more from it? And so It's like more dynamic and active, right? It's like you and life, or I, you know, say life living itself through me, as opposed to adversarially.
Ooh,
what do you think?
I love that. I love it, beautifully expressed.
Yeah. So, all right. So you're a connector. You're a disruptor. When I first kind of came into like your orbit, realized, you know, that you were like here on the planet and what you were up to through a mutual Facebook group. And I remember where I sort of came in was you were talking about being a disruptor and talking about different phases of being.
Yeah.
Disruptor, different stages or just different ways. And for me, what really resonated was that you were saying that it's mavericks. You were talking about mavericks and that not everybody is the one who's going to go out with the sign and protest or even, you know, go on a march, or not everybody is going to sign every petition or, you know, do the things that are that we see sort of surface level as the ways that people protest or make change. And
yeah.
It made a lot of sense to me that I felt like you were saying, like, we use who we are, or we come in the ways that we are with the gifts that we have. So that was my take. And would you take that a little further and talk about the different phases? And, you know, we had talked about unleash your inner maverick. And some of that, I think, is putting a different spin on who we already are, seeing it differently, seeing ourselves in a more empowered way than maybe our family or our, you know, the school or whoever saw us, right? So
yeah.
What can you tell us about that?
Absolutely. So, and I have four very general, I'm so glad that you brought that up. There are four very general stages to disruption. And I always laugh and put this disclaimer in, because anyone who is any kind of disruptor hates any kind of categorization. They're like, well, I don't fit into that. It's like every single one. Well, I don't really fit into that category. I'm like, okay. But I use it just to keep it simple and so that you can start to visualize what's actually going on. So the first stage is when you are you're basically an outcast. Because your focus is on the rejection that you're feeling, whether you feel like, you know, it's your parents or your teacher or whatever form it may be, You don't feel accepted, and that makes you feel like an outcast. And then the second stage is where you graduate to saying, you know what, I'm tired of feeling sad or alone, and I'm going to get out there and I'm going to fight against all of these messed up systems and institutions who are, you know, stifling our voices or whatever it might be. And so that's the rebel phase, where your focus is on righting a wrong. You know, your focus is on really creating change. And then there's a third phase, which is a maverick, where your focus is no longer on righting wrongs. Your focus is purely on creation. It's on creating what you see as the quote-unquote solution, but not even thinking of it as a solution, just as what you think the world would be wonderful if it was like, in whatever form that might be. And then the fourth stage, I hate to say final because we're always growing and evolving beyond, but where I see the a small group of our elders, I look at them as, are global villagers. And they're people who have, their focus is on oneness, their focus is on interdependence, and they're more interested in helping others, and they're not really worried about the mission anymore. They're not worried about righting wrongs. They're not worried about rejection, because they recognize that rejection actually is an illusion, because we're all one, so it's actually impossible to be rejected if you're alive and not rejected. They have that understanding, and they operate from that understanding. And so with these four different phases, like, a lot of times when you think about or you hear the phrase disruptor, you're really thinking usually about the rebel phase, which is phase two, because that's the one that we tend to see the most. We see the angry people talking about how we're destroying the environment. I'm not going to name any names, but I'm sure plenty come to mind. You know, how we're, you know, how the government is, you know, messed up, and big pharma, and, you know, all, you know, and we could go on and on, right, with all the controversy, all the frustration and all the angst and all the pain about racism and bigotry and all these things. And then we tend to forget that there is, let me give you the illustration I saw when you were talking about like an antelope, and the cheetah has taken down the antelope and the cheetah has eaten the antelope, but nature isn't wasteful, right? That antelope still has a little bit of flesh on it. It still has the bones. And then what come in, the little microorganisms and little ants and all those other little critters break down that carcass further until it becomes what? Until it becomes fertilizer, basically becomes something that can nurture the earth into growing something new. And so I think if we think about it like that, it makes it a little bit easier to understand, like, oftentimes, you know, people think, oh, man, it would be horrible to be the antelope. But, like, a global villager understands that the sacrifice that's made is really for the nurturing of the soil. It's for the nurturing of growing something new. And because they understand that we're all connected, they're okay with that sacrifice. And the rebel is kind of like the ant that breaks something down, but then the maverick is the one that plants the thing that grows new. Right. So, like, all of these different stages all have such beauty and such important roles, but there's not just one. There's several different stages, and they all play a part in the creation and the growth and the evolution of our species.
It seems like there would be sort of phases within phases. Like a rebel, you know, not necessarily going to be a rebel all the time. A rebel's going to maybe go through, and I'm not saying, like, you're going to grow out of it. It's just that we're always growing and changing, and on each level, like, there's a microcosm within each microcosm, right? I mean, the critters and the ants and the whoever's probably are, you know, are seeing things differently, too. The different ones, you know, and maybe the microbes are having some feelings about what the ants are up to or whatever. You know, and so it's not just, that's not boxed in and static either, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, everything is fluid. In life, everything is fluid. And you know, in different areas in our lives, we're at different stages. I'm not, you know, in some areas I'm in more of a maverick, in some areas I'm more of a rebel, in some areas I might be more of an outcast, in some areas I might be more like a global villager. And those are always morphing and moving. And some days I'm more in one phase than another. So it's not that these are like static. It's just to help to give a way of like a vocabulary to kind of understand the development or the evolution kind of that we all go through in many different ways in our lives. And I think anyone who's out there giving, like all the people that you interview and you yourself, I mean, like, you're a global villager in the area that you're giving to others, because, you know, you have, it's like, it takes a level of, there's some level of self-sacrifice, there's some level of being able to put aside the personal mission to be able to serve others who want and need that support and help to grow. So we're all, you know, we're all experiencing these different stages and phases in our lives, but I think there's some power to being able to give words to it, because language and concept are very much interconnected. And so, like, being able to give it some very generic labels can sometimes help us to have a deeper understanding and be able to see ourselves with more compassion when we before might have been more frustrated with ourselves for certain behaviors that we may not have been paying as much attention to.
Right. Yeah, well, for me, you know, that first conversation, or actually it was a live that I was listening to that you were doing, was very affirming and validating for me as, you know, a light worker and an empath and someone who just always wants, you know, the best for humanity and all of that stuff. And, you know, in the midst of a time where there has been a lot of the rebels have been out there and, you know, they're the ones getting the attention, positive and negative, and creating some awareness again, positive and negative. And, you know, what I've been doing is like leading meditations for world peace once a week. Well, you know, there's part of me is like, well, big deal, you know, like that's nice. You know, you sit in your house and you get on, you know, Facebook or Zoom or whatever, and you lead people in opening their hearts. And on one hand, I totally know that that's important and I believe it. And, you know, it also feels like, you're not doing enough, you know, and like I should be doing something else. And maybe I should be doing something else, but the something else that I should be doing is not going out in the streets and marching or protesting or whatever, because I'm not really, like, that's not my bag. You know, I have skills and capacities to do other. And other people are, you know, thankfully in their space and in their lane or their time of being somewhere else. And so it helped me, it helped to keep me from invalidating my own contribution, I guess, right? And the importance of where I was at and what I have to offer, in along with what everybody else, where they're at and what they have to offer. So I appreciated that on a personal level. And I think it's an important discussion for people to have who do want to make change and who do want to, you know, be activists and agents of change, that we get to, we can do it from our own gifts and our own wisdom and experience.
Yeah, I mean, our souls are all going to call us in different ways. It's just listening to the soul calling. It's the danger. And I read something today about the danger of social media. The danger often is that we see other people, what other people are doing, and maybe there's a hint of shame in the message, like, you know, how dare you do this or that, or not pay attention to this, or not fight that. And we tend to get caught up in that instead of staying in our own lane. Because if there's something that Nietzsche is here to do on this planet, and she's listening, she will hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's something that Deborah is meant to do here on this planet, if she's listening, she will hear it. So there's no need for us to start trying to turn into carbon copies of someone else. Again, it's a different form of conformity of like, okay, because this is so big of a news item, because this is such an important issue, I'm now going to go and join the cause. Which, if you're feeling called to do it, that's great. Go do it. But if you're only doing it because you feel guilty that if you're not doing it, you're not doing enough, then think about the sponsoring thought being that guilt and understand that that's the frequency that you're bringing into what you're doing.
Great.
So is that the frequency you want to bring into what you're doing? Is that the water crystal that you want to create? So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. I mean, acting from inspiration, acting from higher self, higher guidance, from spirit, however we kind of take that in. And I think most of the people who are listening to the show, you know, have their own sense of spirituality and connection to whether it's, you know, Gaia, Source, God, that coming from those higher vibrations rather than moving, yeah, out of guilt or out of conformity or out of, you know, just knee-jerk reaction, letting higher mind and higher vibration come into play can bring us higher vibration results and change. So, so I'm kind of jumping around here a little bit. I'm curious to know how all of this shows up or informs your parenting. What does it look like to be, you know, a global villager and have this perspective while raising an 8-year-old girl in these times?
That's a loaded question. I aspire to be a global villager. Most days I know I'm at best a maverick.
Yes.
But I think that it's a great question because just recently, due to some, you know, changes, she just really, my daughter was incredibly angry with me. She was like, I don't want to be here and I don't want to listen. And it was a surprise because that was the first time she'd ever been, you know, so kind of defiant to me. And I just said, okay, all right. I'm just going to allow this to play out. And it took a few weeks. But all of that changed into more warmth and more her, you know, being more eager to spend time with me and more eager to talk with me and more eager to get my thoughts on things. And so what I realized is I think everything goes through ebbs and flows. That was my first encounter with, you know, I'm sure it was my first case of what I'm sure I'm going to have a lovely, you know, decades worth of. But it was like, wow, okay, this is a new page turn, and it really kind of caught me off guard. But I think, you know, just like with everything else in my life, I've always been a good observer when I just kind of sit still and calm down and get quiet. I'm good at observing. So I like to observe what's going on and kind of be a little bit of a spectator. And that helps me to then understand, you know, that pretty much none of it is anything to be really worried about. At the end of the day, it's the same mantra. Like, you're going to be okay. It's all okay. Nothing's wrong. Everything's fine. But, you know, in the moment, you might be like, you know, so you have to really, like, for me, what I've learned as a parent is just to, like, just do a time, take my own time out and take a break and stop and observe and not try to, like, fix anything. Because once I stop and observe, usually I find out that there's nothing to fix and that I was just kind of hyperventilating for no good reason. So I would say that that has been my biggest, you know, lesson that parenting has taught me. That's one, I mean, she's only 8, so I've got plenty more lessons to learn. But I would say that's the biggest one so far is just being able to observe from a place of peace and to just allow her, the other, whoever the other is, to be, you know, what they are. And, you know, do we really die? Do we fall off the face of the planet? You know, is there a world war because I allowed them to just be themselves? No. So it's
right.
Kind of like learning how to just observe and say less and just observe more. And then usually I end up ultimately getting asked, you know, what my thoughts are. And that's probably one of the hardest lessons for me to learn because I'm a recovering control freak. But it's been, but it's not as hard now only because I'm very kind to myself. I've learned how to be really kind to myself, so I don't really spend much time in self, you know, beating up. I just say, okay, I observe that I went off into control freak land again. Let me come back and you know, just kind of move with myself. So being patient with myself then helps me to be, you know, more patient and observant with her.
Right. Well, I love that. I mean, it sounds like you totally let her be in her own power and her own truth, right, and move through it with you instead of, again, you know, that kind of adversarial would like to shut her down or to make her be a certain way, you know, be with you a certain way. So I see a young, you know, leader, and not, you know, leader not necessarily of like, you know, some political leader or leader of movement or whatever, but when I think we are proud of ourselves and confident in who we are, we just naturally emanate that and radiate that, those truths and that strength. And that makes us a leader because it's different, right? And different and powerful. Wow. Right. Well, I'll interview her in another few years and see what she has to say.
I'm sure she'll give you a really colorful, you know, kids, they, I love how there's no filter. And so sometimes the things, honestly, she's my free entertainment because the things that come out of her mouth, it's always a fun journey when you can laugh at it and not be, like, upset about it.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, in the big picture, it's all okay. We're just all learning and on our journey here. What else I want to know is, you know, what are you up to now? Because where I kind of found you, it seemed like you're launching yourself out into the wild, out into the air, into something new. I haven't said much about what that is. And I'm wondering if if you're at a place where you can kind of share what's coming up, what's your new work going to look like, or what kind of growth are you going through now? What's happening?
Yeah, thank you. It's so funny because when you were asking about this earlier, I was like, words were not coming. Like feeling, you know, maybe a few images, but not words.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, I trust that when we talk, it'll come through because I see myself as like as being entrusted with a specific frequency, like a specific type of life. And I'm not the only one, but it's very, very fragile. It's not like, you can blow gusts of wind at it and it's fine. Like, you know, you really kind of have to shelter it a little bit. So it's my journey as a business owner has been to like find a way to, you know, really hold this really delicate frequency and at the same time share it as much as possible. And I kept feeling this this strong conflict, you know, between trying to market a business and sharing this light in its truer form as I could. And so I think this new emergence that's happening right now is just like not seeing it as much as a business as much as it's just a message that needs to be shared, and like just walking a lot lighter around everything to do with economics and commerce and business and all those kinds of things, because I felt like they were the way that I was being encouraged or taught or what I had observed, most of it was really out of alignment with, like, my true nature and the true nature of the message that I carry. So, like, what my goal is and what I'm, you know, ramping up to really share is, like, hey, this is, like, the core essence of this work. And this is what I'm about. I know it may sound weird to you. I know it may sound great to some people. I don't know what your take on it will be, but in any way, it's not dependent on your acceptance of it. It's just, this is what it is. And I'm just going to do my best to present it unadulterated. And you might be wondering what it is. and really, my message has a few parts. One of them is that we're never alone. Because one of the things I'm here to heal is rejection. I have had to heal so much of that within myself, like so much rejection and feeling that way, that outcast feeling, like just so rejected. And so a lot of what I know helped me the most in those years, and even now sometimes, is just the reminder that I'm not the only one experiencing it. I'm not alone. Just an illusion. So that's one aspect that I really want. And then as a thriver after domestic violence, this is something that I feel very strongly about, because there's so many different levels of sabotage that happen to your trust in yourself when you go through emotional abuse. And so it's just like, and we've all probably been through some form of it in some way or another, but it's like learning how to really trust that you're not alone and you're not crazy. So, believe yourself, like trust yourself, like learning that again. And then that ties in a way, it doesn't seem like it does, but it ties in a way to the other main message that I'm here to present, which is that of the fact that we are all one. And if we actually live and work with that knowledge, life looks completely different. It doesn't even remotely resemble what we're doing right now. Like, where are we landfills if we really understood as a species that we are interconnected with everything on the planet? There would be no way. There would be no, banks and, debts in the millions, trillions and whatever. I mean, all of these things would all disappear. And just healing the wound of rejection and understanding that we are all connected, and that, and one of the tools that I've really appreciated recently is Gene Keys. I was introduced to it a while back, but only recently, kind of dove into it again. And it was just so affirming of the fact that, the work that I'm here to do is to help to break down those borders and boundaries and fear of the other, fear of rejection, because that in itself, just that one thing, would end world poverty. It would end pollution. It would end so many things. It's up to me, it's like a panacea. It's like it cures all. Like, how can you be racist if you know that we're all one? How can you be anything? You know that we're all one and we're all connected, and anything that I do to you, I'm doing to myself, basically. So it's like such a powerful concept, and in realizing that me trying to present my work as a business was actually I was feeling a lot of resistance, because there's so much within business, even the things that seem like really, positive, that still are based on there's you and then there's other. And the other need to protect yourself from, and you need to set boundaries with, and you need to, so all of those things, it just was constantly conflicting for me. So that's why I took the time to kind of go inside a little bit and really pay more attention to how I wanted to present this work, so that it would be in better alignment, and so that it could touch people in a more pure form. And then what they choose to do with that is their choice.
Right. Well, I respect that. I respect your willingness to kind of sit in that and not jump into one of the molds that, is presented as what you can do with, your vision or your idea or your, your concept or whatever, how to package it, right? How to put it together, what niche to, promote it to and whatever. And I think that a lot of other light workers and healers and people who really feel like we're here to shift things energetically, and, we're doing that in various ways, and yet, we're also in the material reality, so we also need to do it not only energetically, right, but with our words and by creating things or, interconnected, whatever. it's challenging to not fall into those molds or templates and to try to find your own way or find our way. You know, I mean, I think we're not alone in that either. You know, there are other people who are trying to figure this out, and having those sort of conversations, I think, are important with other people who are trying to create something new without controlling it, without controlling, you know, people's outcomes or whatever. So bravo on that.
Thank you.
We have a few minutes left, and I would like to tell a short story, and I also want to make sure that while you don't have, you know, a packaged business or thing to offer people, but if people want to, you know, engage in conversation with you or ask you questions or whatever, what's a good way for people to connect with you and find out more about, you know, what you're doing, what you're thinking?
Absolutely.
You know,
yeah. You want to tell the story first, or do you need to do that first?
You do that first, and I will preface that, though, by saying that on Facebook, I have a group called The Not Too Late Show, and I created it so that I could put this sort of information that you're about to tell us in there, where people can, you know, go and find it, like more of an extended show notes, and the replay link will be there and whatnot. So if you search in Facebook for The Not Too Late Show, you will find that, and therefore find the information that I will be putting in for Deborah. So that said, you know, what's a good way for people to connect with you?
Yeah, I mean, right now, as I said, there's basically two simple ways that you can connect with me. Deborah at, so D-E-B-O-R-A-H, at A-T, G for global, V for village, C for campus. So Deborah at GVC at gmail.com. That's the placeholder email that I have right now if you want to send me an email, or you can friend request me at Facebook. My handle is Deborah, D-E-B-O-R-A-H-A, Maverick, all one word. So that's
okay.
My current, and if you friend request me, I will, you know, I will be letting you know when I, you know, get all of my other digital presence up.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Yeah, so for now you're percolating and growing kind of behind the scenes. Sounds like, you know, you're onto some big concepts and new ways of approach and sharing. And I look forward to hearing more about that. So just what you were talking about just a little bit earlier about how, you know, we're all one, and if we really saw that, you know, it would be a complete game changer, and I agree with you. And what came to mind for me is a story that I have shared different places, different times. I think I might have even told it in the initial episode of the radio show when Nicole Whitney was interviewing me. I do a shorter version, and just because in this conversation, in this context, there's like a little more of a deeper understanding or spin on it. So to be briefer than not, I was away at a conference for the weekend, and I woke up in the middle of the night to my grandmother's, my dead grandmother's presence very strongly in the room with me. I don't know, I might have also been asleep and awake at the same time, and she was also dead and alive at the same time, the way, you know, dreams and things like that can go. And she was unconditional love in my life. I mean, she wasn't the only love in my life, but we really had this thing, you know, and it was just deep and wonderful and unconditional. And so in this dream, she took my face in her hands and she said to me, "Do you know how much you love me?" And I said, "Yes." And she said, "Well, that's how much I love you, and that's what God is like." And so, like, that understanding of, you know, like, and I wasn't much of a believer in God, so that was a whole new thing for me, too, that she was talking about God, because when she was alive, she was an atheist. But anyway, there we were. You know, and for me, the big concept was if we're all one,
then my sense of myself loving you is the same thing as me loving myself, because we're all one, you know, and vice versa. And just that idea that if we're all connected, then wherever you're putting out love and receiving love, it's all coming and going from and to the same place. Ultimately, it just looks like we're separate. So just wanted to share that.
I mean, it's just so, I love that story. It's just so symmetrical. It makes things so simple when we can actually start to play with that idea. A lot of things actually make a lot more sense when we're not in the illusion of everyone is separate. A lot of things make a lot more sense. I mean, think about the fact that the atom and the universe are structured the same way. Life is just a bunch of holographic patterns. It's just, you know, the same pattern over and over again, fractal patterns. And so to think that, you know, there's it's just a coincidence that the atoms, you know, look similar to the system. Like, no, it's not a coincidence. That's design. So it's like understanding that, like, on a scale of like just us as people, as human beings, it just feels so different. And we've all experienced it. We've experienced it in a sunrise and, you know, being with loved ones in a moment, you know, maybe even our favorite team winning the game and we're all in the stadium and everyone's cheering and